Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you on this Tuesday, December the 15th. Welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, calls for action to quell the violence in Burundi. But this analyst warns foreign military intervention may be premature.
People are often talking about the possibility of deploying a military force, but the one important step that we have not yet achieved is an international mediated discussion between the opposition and the ruling party.
And in South Africa, a veteran finance minister returns to his old job, hoping to calm investors' nerves.
We will stay the course of sound fiscal management. We can have extra expenditure only if we raise extra revenue.
Pravin Gordon. Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
The United States has ordered non-emergency US government personnel and dependents to leave Burundi and warned other Americans to quit as well. Top European Union officials, meanwhile, called on Monday for action to end the violence in the Central African nation. This follows the killing of 87 people during and after coordinated assaults on three military installations in Burundi early on Friday. The fighting was said to be the worst since a failed coup against President Pierre Nkurunziza in May. Our correspondent in the Burundian capital Bujumbura, Apollinaire Niiora, told me that the government is claiming that there was European involvement in the assaults, though its allegations are short on specifics.
The government held a council of ministers and linked the attacks against military barracks on Friday with some European countries. The spokesman of the government said in a report of the meeting of the Council of Ministers that some foreigners were behind the attacks. Here is government spokesman Philippe Nzobonariba.
The Council of Ministers was informed that these attacks could be linked to a certain political camp carried out by foreign mercenaries working for the opposition. A foreign hand is not far from these acts to destabilize the country. The council was informed that officials at a European private school in the capital Bujumbura had invited parents since Thursday, on the eve of the attack, to keep their children at home on Friday morning due to insecurity. This proves that the attack was known in advance in some spheres.
What are international observers in Burundi making of these developments?
Yeah, there is a mission that was sent by the African Union in terms of those who are dealing with human rights. They were sent here on Tuesday last week, and they paid a courtesy visit to the first vice president, Gaston Sindimo. And at the end of the courtesy visit, the head of the delegation, Pansi Makula, said,
"Our preliminary opinion is that there are human rights violations that have taken place, such as arbitrary killings, arbitrary arrests, issues of impunity, and all this is leading to the strain in the social and economic situation in the country."
What has happened to the mediation process involving Uganda? Has it stalled completely?
Well, to say that it has stalled completely would be wrong, but here internally, there is a commission called the National Commission on Inter-Burundian Dialogue that was set up, and it has already started internal consultations. But so far, talks with the real opposition or the people who went into exile have not started under the mediation of Uganda.
Apollinaire Niiora, when the United States orders personnel to leave a country such as Burundi, that clearly has a dramatic ring to it. But what does it actually signify? That's a question my colleague Isaac Mugabe put to Yolanda Buka, analyst on Burundian affairs at the Institute of Security Studies in Nairobi.
Well, this is not the first time that American government has asked non-essential personnel to leave Burundi. In fact, they had just been authorized to return at the beginning of November, hoping that the situation had, to a certain extent, normalized. Obviously, the recent upsurge of violence has led the government to revise the position and to return to calling its population to, or its citizens to, reconsider non-essential travel to the region.
There are many gruesome pictures of dead bodies, and no one seems to really come out strongly to condemn these killings since Friday. Who's going to stop these killings anyway?
I think one of the biggest challenges in trying to deal with the violence in Burundi that we have yet to see a resumption of negotiations or mediations between the ruling party and the opposition. We've seen no conversation between the two sides of the divide. And in fact, people are often talking about the possibility of deploying a military force, whether it be through the East African Standby Force or it be through the UN. But the one important step that we have not yet achieved is an international mediated discussion between the opposition and the ruling party.
Do you think President Pierre Nkurunziza is ready to listen to any advice from anyone, let's say the East African community or the African Union for that matter?
He's demonstrated that he's not necessarily willing to be swayed in terms of his mandate. But at the same time, it's important to remember that Burundi is cash-strapped at the moment. An increasing number of partners are divesting from the country. Tourism is at an all-time low. He may not be willing to listen, but I think there are people around him who are aware of the challenges that the country are facing. The EU mediations or negotiations that are underway, according to Article 96 of the Cotonou Protocol, may be a way to push for mediation. But until now, the president has shown very little willingness to engage in dialogue.
But even Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni was nominated as the mediator, but he seems not to have enough time to deal with this crisis. Do you think he was the right man for this kind of task?
I personally do not believe that President Museveni has accomplished much since he's been appointed the mediator of the crisis. I do not believe that East African Community is the organization through which a political settlement can be found in Burundi. There are too many competing foreign policy priorities, and each government have its own domestic imperatives at the moment, which makes it very difficult for the organization to have a united voice on what needs to take place in Burundi. I think the African Union needs to take a stronger role and more leadership in trying to find a solution in Burundi and bring the different actors to the table. Unfortunately, President Museveni seems to be quite taken with his re-election campaign and has delegated the task to his Minister of Defense, which does not seem to be an actor that is agreed upon by both sides of the political divide. So the one way in which a mediation could be more useful is by keeping the East African Community involved, but also have a stronger presence or a stronger leadership from the African Union and possibly some of the key countries who've helped achieve the signature of the Arusha Agreement a few years ago.
Yolanda Bucher from the Institute of Security Studies.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
In South Africa, calls for President Jacob Zuma to step down have intensified following his bewildering cabinet reshuffle. Zuma sacked Finance Minister Nzenze Nene, replacing him with little-known David van Rooyen. Then, 4 days later, van Rooyen was removed and replaced by former Minister of Finance Pravin Gordhan. Gordhan, who had the post from 2009 to 2014, has assured the nation and the international community that he will do all in his power to restore confidence in South Africa's economy. From Johannesburg, Tuzo Kamalo reports.
One country, yet three finance ministers in 1 week. This is what South Africans experienced in the past week, and it is spreading panic and great economic distress. These back-and-forth appointments by President Zuma caused the rand to tumble, attracting deafening calls for his resignation. Max du Preez, South African author and political commentator, says Zuma is now a liability and a danger to the country's over 50 million people.
I think power has corrupted him. He has overestimated his invincibility.
But Zuma has made a quick move to rectify the appointment blunders. On Sunday, he removed Minister Van Rooyen and replaced him with former Minister of Finance Pravin Gordhan. This immediately injected more life into the rand, and it sprang from 15 rands 83 cents to the dollar to 15 rands 9 cents. And on Monday, Gordhan sought to reassure South Africans, saying all was now under control.
We will stay the course of sound fiscal management. We can have extra expenditure only if we raise extra revenue. As a government, we will not cut pro-poor programs, growth-inducing programs, and investment in the economy.
However, political analyst Abdul Wahid Patel applauded Zuma for doing the right thing, but cautions that it will take more than statements to rebuild economic confidence that existed before.
I don't think it's going to be an overnight situation, firstly in terms of completely quelling the fears and uncertainties and the risk appetite of the market, both existing investors but also potential investors, domestic and internationally.
And some analysts say Zuma's actions have already caused enormous damage to his political image and that of the country. The Zuma Must Fall campaign dominated the media on Monday. 28-year-old South African Phakiswa William Kalane is one of those not ready to forgive the president.
Rather, if maybe you can get a better captain to drive the ship from sinking, someone better. Jacob Zuma, it's fine. You can go to Nkandla, look after his cattle and his chickens, how they are running there. It's okay, yeah. Nothing to do with the country.
But the ruling African National Congress, ANC, says it is still 100% behind the president. Zizi Kodwa is the ANC spokesperson.
The ANC has got full confidence in President Zuma. Leadership under President Zuma is still hands on the deck.
Those wanting Zuma out are organizing to march to his offices at the Union Buildings in Pretoria on Wednesday. On the other hand, the Democratic Alliance wants Parliament to convene in January and a motion of no confidence in Zuma to be put to the vote.
Tuzo Kamalo reporting.
Africa on the move.
Rap is becoming increasingly popular in East Africa. In Uganda, one 14-year-old girl is rapping about the country's problems, corruption, child abuse, and a whole host of other social issues. Her music allows her to spell out unpleasant truths, not only on stage, but also on television. Privilege Mushaniri introduces her in this week's Africa on the Move, written by Grit Hoffman.
Behind the microphone, 14-year-old Zokabuye raps out her message. It is a gospel song about God's love, forgiveness, and repentance. On the opposite side, young boys seated on a sofa are nodding their heads in acknowledgement of her voice. Uganda's youngest female rapper goes by the name of MC Loy. She has become a star in her country, regularly rapping the news on Uganda's NTV. The show, known as Newsbeat, uses music to cover controversial topics and engage younger audiences who don't normally watch the news.
Making them to get to know what's happening in the country, abroad and so on, that really helps them like to know what's going on in the world, because if you live in the world and you know nothing about what's happening, then you may find yourself in a bad thing or a problem or so on.
It is time to go on air. MC Loy is all dressed up and ready to hit the mic. Today she is talking about the passing of the Tobacco Control Bill.
The Tobacco Control Bill 2014 was recently passed by the Ugandan Parliament, with several stringent measures to be implemented by the government.
The show aims to promote diversity and visibility for marginalized groups and to push the boundaries of press limitations in the country. Zokabuye buys newspapers as often as she can just to get to know what is going on in the country. Her biggest concern is lack of access to education.
That's part of child abuse, not taking a child at school. I wouldn't blame like parents who don't have money to take children at school, but I would only blame the government, which like doesn't build the infrastructure for the kids and so on, schools, yeah.
I will not be afraid.
Her desire to remove fear and instill courage motivates her to teach kids at Sunday school.
You will hold a son in your arms. Well, she has no son.
She dreams of becoming Uganda's first female head of state. According to the constitution, she has to wait until she's 35 to run for president. That leaves her plenty of time to get the word out to all her young fans in Uganda.
Yes, I'm proud to be a Ugandan living in the beautiful motherland, the Pearl of Africa, that grows every day and night with mega malls, roads, hospitals, education system, and so much more. But we need some more. And I want to be the first male president of my country, Uganda, the Pearl of Africa. What? Yeah, that was it.
And that report was written by Grit Hoffman.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
Trade ministers from 162 countries that belong to the World Trade Organization, the WTO, will be gathering in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, today. They'll be working on an agreement to liberalise world trade. But if the past is anything to go by, their chances of success are slim. The current round of trade talks, known as the Doha Round, has been going on for 14 years. At the start of the round, WTO countries promised to open up markets and reduce protectionist measures. But the long-awaited breakthrough just hasn't happened. James Shimanyula in Nairobi looks at what Kenya, the host nation, is expecting from these talks.
Kenya believes that a fair, non-discriminatory, rules-based multilateral trading system is crucial for the global economy and achievement of sustainable development. That is President Uhuru Kenyatta's message as his country hosts the ministerial conference today. Kenyatta sees Kenya's hosting of the conference as global commitment to integrating development countries into the multilateral trading system.
This is the way to go for us as a continent to realize the dream of the continental free trade area. I am therefore pleased to note that the entire globe has more than before realized the social, economic, and sustainable development potential that this continent has to offer.
The ministerial conference is the topmost body under the governance structure set up by the agreement establishing the WTO. As the conference takes place for the first time in Africa, several issues are on the table for discussion. Among them are agriculture, accessions, anti-dumping, safeguards, subsidies, e-commerce, environment, non-agricultural market access, and trade facilitation. Participants from Africa are expected to push for change of dates set by WTO for elimination of agricultural export subsidies. WTO has proposed 2020 as the year for elimination of agricultural subsidies for developed countries and 2023 for developing nations. Kenya got the opportunity to host the historic occasion after Turkey withdrew its bid. Kenya's Foreign Affairs Minister Amina Mohamed sees this as recognition of Africa as a rising continent.
It's good that we get a positive signal from the international community that Africa actually matters. So we're very, very happy. We're very proud. We feel privileged to be doing this on behalf of Africa.
At least 7,000 delegates will take part in the World Trade Organization Ministerial Conference. This represents 162 member states. The West African nation of Liberia and Afghanistan will be presented to trade ministers for approval. If approved, WTO will have membership of 164 nations. The World Trade Organization conference is taking place in Nairobi at a time when the country is still battling Al-Shabaab militants. Nevertheless, Secretary General of WTO Taleb Rifai is optimistic about safety of Nairobi.
We need to make it safe without panicking, without showing the world that we are afraid. The world can come here and feel very, very comfortable simply because we're all in it together.
And that report was compiled by James Shimanyula in Nairobi.
Making a difference.
Making a difference this week takes us to Cameroon, which has launched a campaign to encourage more young people and women of all ages to make use of information technology. The government claims that its ICT training program is already improving productivity and the quality of goods and services. It even says it is helping to bring down unemployment. Marky Kinseka has this report on a poultry farmer whose business has been transformed by the new technology.
32-year-old Nili Ondobo cleans her chicken and pigs at Corbison on the outskirts of Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé. The mother of four dropped out of secondary school at 16 and remained jobless. It was not until she acquired training in basics of ICT alongside other women and youths that she was able to obtain a loan from the National Employment Fund to start up a business.
Every morning I share pictures and videos of chicken and pigs I rear that are ready for the market via SMS or the internet. My customers, who are mostly restaurant owners, hotel managers and retailers, tell me the quantity they need and I immediately supply. I do not need to go from door to door to propose what I have, and I must tell you, it is highly profitable. Je n'ai plus besoin de faire le porte-à-porte
pour proposer mes produits. With the profits, Nili recruited three cleaners and pays each of them $100 per month, $40 more than Cameroon's recommended minimum wage. Others trained like Nili have either created their own businesses or are recruited. Alongside those who are being trained at the moment are Christopher Ngoa, a university graduate but jobless at the moment, and Charles Ngam-Ebua, a 10-year-old pupil who hopes to improve on her English language skills.
It is a field that is advancing very much and it is penetrating in almost every domain, and it has a great future.
I use technology to learn this English and I listen carefully. The English gets more improved. That is why now I know how to talk this good English. In fact, impeccable English. With e-learning, you learn whatever you want.
Aman Claude Abanda, initiator and main trainer on ICTs, says by training the youths and women on the opportunities offered by ICTs, Cameroon will reduce its high unemployment and underemployment rate, estimated at 40% by the country's National Institute of Statistics.
Avec 1 million en 20 ans, nous devons former 50,000 par an.
Since we are targeting 1 million people in 20 years, we have to train about 50,000 every year. We shall accelerate the training as from 2016. It should be noted that we also want to train professionals in all fields because ICTs will improve whatever they are doing and provide more opportunities.
C'est l'alphabet du monde moderne.
Aman Claude Abanda says Cameroon is following the footsteps of other African countries like Senegal, Mali, South Africa, and Kenya that are using ICTs to boost their economies.
And that report was compiled by Moki Kinseka. And now, before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. European Union officials are demanding action to halt violence in Burundi after scores of people were killed in clashes linked to the disputed third term of President Pierre Nkurunziza. In South Africa, veteran finance minister Pravin Gordhan returns to his old job, hoping to calm investors' nerves. And World Trade Organization talks are due to start in Nairobi later today. We welcome your comments on our programme. You can send an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. A letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Or an SMS to country code 49. 160-957-59510. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.